All right, good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
If you got a Bible, be turning to Matthew 18. Matthew 18, and we're going to do another parable tonight. And this parable is often referred to as the parable of the unforgiving servant. And I wanted to do this one. It's somewhat of a companion lesson to what we talked about this morning. I've been reminded numerous times about how I went over this morning, and I appreciate all those reminders. And I will try to keep tonight a little shorter. This should be a fairly simple lesson, but as a companion lesson that really emphasizes the idea of mercy. You know, where James starts off by saying, "Don't be one that shows partiality, shows favoritism." He ends by saying, "Be one that shows mercy so that you can receive mercy." I don't have a slide for this, Sam, but Sam, one of the verses that Sam gave me last week on the notes that he gave me was from Ephesians chapter 2 that simply says this, "But God." So, "But God" comes in the context of us being in a position where we're hopeless, where we have no hope. As we talked about, how are we all equal in God's sight? Yes, because we're all equally lost. So we're all equally lost, but God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, and we talked this morning how we're universally loved, everyone is loved by God, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. And so that, again, another reminder about the mercy of God and that how we are supposed to take that mercy and turn it toward others. That was the lesson this morning from James. That's really the lesson from this parable, the unforgiving servant, which, as I said, comes in Matthew 18. We're going to start down in verse 21. And the first word in verse 21 is the word "then." Well, if you look just prior in Matthew 18, Matthew 18 begins with the disciples coming to Jesus asking who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. That comes after, I'm already going down a side road, I may end up going long again. That comes immediately after chapter 17, where you have two really significant events. You have the transfiguration, where Jesus kind of singled out three of the disciples, Peter, James, and John. And then you have the miraculous catching of the single fish that had the coin in its mouth that was used to pay the temple tax for Peter and Jesus. And I've often wondered, don't know, if that's why the disciples were arguing about who was going to be the greatest, because you had some of them that had been singled out, you know, three of them taken up into the Mount of Transfiguration, one who had his temple tax paid by Jesus with catching a fish. I don't know why they were arguing about it, but Jesus uses that to make a point about, you know, what really matters. It's not about being great. But then that continues on, and in the verses immediately preceding this parable is Jesus' instruction about what, you know, what do you do with a brother who sins against you? And that's where he gives the instruction about going and talking to the brother, and then if he won't listen, bring others with him. We know, most of us know that. So this comes immediately on the heels of that discussion where Jesus is saying, if you have someone that mistreats you, that sins against you, this is what you're supposed to do. So, Peter, who never can keep his mouth shut, right, during the ministry of Jesus, Peter comes up and says this. He says to him, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him?" Now, I know I've talked about this verse before. I don't think I did a sermon on this. I don't think so. But I talked about it because I said that what Peter does here is what I call the ask, answer, ask, which is you ask a question, but before you get an answer back, you answer it. And you answer it in such a way as like you're expecting the other person to answer it that way. My wife She's not here and there's not streaming, so I can say this. She does this to me all the time. She'll go, well, what'd you think about his speech last night? I thought it was terrible. It was a complete injustice. It was awful. I can't imagine anyone liking it. But what do you think? You know, that kind of thing. That's the ask, answer, ask. And so this is an ask, answer, ask, okay? Because Peter says, the second ask is not worded, but it's implied. He's waiting for Jesus to answer. But he says, well, how often will my brother sin against me? Now, again, Jesus has just been talking about what to do if your brother sins against you. How often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Okay, so it's simple question. But then he answers it. As many as seven times? Now, just so you know, the rabbinic consensus, so you may or may not know, but so much of what the religion of the time of Jesus that we refer to as Judaism or Phariseeism was based on the oral traditions of the Pharisee, the oral traditions that had been handed down that were adopted by the Pharisees, compiled ultimately into this, what is essentially a set of commentaries called the Mishnah. And there are commentaries on everything, everything. If you go to Israel today, on a non-Sabbath morning and you go to some place for breakfast, there is only eggs and cheese. No meat. Eggs and cheese. You go, well, why eggs and cheese? Well, they can point to two of the oral laws that addressed that, you know, why you should in the mornings only eat eggs and cheese. So it just went to the point of being absurd, right? All of that to say is the rabbinic consensus about how many times you were supposed to forgive someone who sinned against you was three times. Okay? Three times. So what's Peter doing? Peter's looking for an attaboy, right? Peter's looking for, whoa, Peter, you are righteous. I mean, seven times? That's more than double what's expected of you. If someone did that, I mean, they would be holy. That's what he's looking for, right? He's looking for a pat on the back. And so he asks, he answers it, and now he's waiting for the attaboy. And I was thinking, I don't have many illustrations tonight, but I was thinking about there was a time in my life, my adult life, where the only healthy thing I was doing was running. I was not healthy in the way I was eating. I was not healthy in the way I was sleeping. All that, just running. And I would go see my doctor. Hey, what are you doing to take care of yourself? And I'd be like, I'm running 40 miles a week. I've done two marathons in the last year. I'm just waiting for him to go, you know, well, tell me about your sugar intake. Well, tell me about your, you know, and I'm like, it's not good. You know, it wasn't good. Well, this is what happens to Peter. Peter's looking for an attaboy like, hey, you're doing great, Peter. And Jesus gives a really kind of confounding answer. He says, I do not say to you seven times, but 70 times seven. Now, I know different translations have translated that different ways. But the point is, regardless of what the number actually is, you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's 70 times 7 or it's 77 times or whatever it is, it's a big number, right? It's a big number. And it's a big number for a reason, okay? The specific of the number itself is not what's important with the answer. It's the fact that it's so large. He's trying to make a point to Peter about showing mercy. So this, you know, I can only imagine with Peter, you know, saying, hey, should I do it seven times? He's waiting for the attaboy, waiting for the pat on the back. And Jesus goes, no, 77 times or 70 times seven. And going, what? What are you talking about? Well, Jesus takes that kind of confounding answer and he tells this parable as a way to clarify it. Okay? As a way to clarify what he's saying. So he says this, therefore, you know, in view of what I'm telling you with this gigantic number, the kingdom of heaven. Now, many of the parables of Jesus, especially in the book of Matthew, start off talking about the kingdom of heaven. And we've talked about this a lot. We talked about it a bunch during the series on the Sermon on the Mount. Most of you probably remember kingdom of heaven, unique to Matthew. It's not just talking about heaven. It's talking about the kingdom that is God's. It's based in heaven. And so many of these parables are designed by Jesus to give us some insight into kingdom principles, how the kingdom works, how the subjects are expected to live, but some insight into God's kingdom. And this is one of those instances where he's trying to give us some insight into the kingdom. He says, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wishes to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought into him who owed him 10,000 talents. Now, we don't reckon money in terms of talents today, so maybe some of this can be lost on us. In my notes, I have a reference to 1 Chronicles 29, which is a discussion, a presentation about the preparation for the building of the temple. And in that, it talks about how David had donated to prepare to build the temple 3,000 talents of gold and 7,000 talents of silver. So in total, 10,000 talents. Just to give you some sense of, this was going towards building what would be an incredibly magnificent structure, 10,000 talents. So the point here is that this is a large sum of money. There have been some who have attempted to take this and translate it into something that we understand, and I have seen calculations all the way from 12 million of today's dollars all the way to 1 billion of today's dollars, depending on differences in how you calculate the value of precious metals and things that I don't know anything about. But again, just like with the 70 times 7 or 77 times, the importance is not the number, it's the size. This is an unpayable debt, okay? 10,000 talents in this story is meant to represent something that this servant cannot possibly repay. Not in a million lifetimes, okay? He can't repay it. He can't repay it. So, says he owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, again, that's the whole point of this gigantic number. Since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold. And again, if you want some references to kind of how the law of Moses procedure behind, not being able to pay debts, I got two passages for you, which we're not going to take the time to go look at. But Leviticus 25, verse 39, 2 Kings 4, verse 1, to go get some more information about, the law of Moses had to say about not being able to pay debts and servitude and all of those things, okay? But he says, since he had, he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So he goes, I'm going to sell you and get what I can out of you. Okay, so the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. Now, how would you describe the action that the master took on the servant? It's mercy, right? It's mercy. The servant didn't do anything to deserve being forgiven of this debt, right? It was mercy. He was shown mercy for something that he could not possibly repay. Now, what is this an obvious metaphor for? As Sam pointed me to, I would not have thought of this for this lesson. I had not gotten a note from Sam. Ephesians 2. But God, being rich in mercy, the great love through which he loved us, God, this is God showing us mercy for our unforgivable debt that we could not pay. We have been forgiven in the same way. But, verse 28, but when the same servant, so now this servant has been shown mercy, he has been forgiven. Same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. Now, the contrast between 100 denarii And 10,000 talents is significant. 100 denarii, I wrote this in my notes, is a day's wage for a foot soldier or a common laborer. So you have, on one hand, anywhere from $12 million to $1 billion, and on the other hand, you have a single day's wages. Okay? Again, the point is not the number, but the size of the number. One is unreachable, and one is really small. Okay? It's a day's wage. He found a fellow servant who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, "Pay what you owe." So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, "Have patience with me, and I will pay you." He refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. Now, again, the obvious implication here for us, if we were to do the same thing that this person is doing, it would be that we have been forgiven this incredible debt by God, but we then don't show mercy to our fellow man. Exactly what James was talking about in James 1. Mercy triumphs over judgment. It is for us to take the mercy we have received from God and reflect it to those who we come in contact with. And here in this story is an illustration of someone who did not do that. And the consequences of not doing that are severe. Verse 31, when his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. Now, I want you to think about what James said this morning in those last two verses, verses 12 and 13. After he had been explaining that, this idea of partiality, favoritism, is sinful. It's a sin. And the weight of sin is what? You're guilty of everything. Right? You're going to be judged by the full weight of the law. How do you avoid that? You need mercy, right? And how do you receive mercy? You got to show mercy. But if you don't show mercy, you're going to be judged by the full weight of the law. And none of us want that, right? Why? Because we're not going to pass. We're not going to make it. This is exactly what Jesus said. And we covered this weeks ago, months ago, in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6. We don't have to turn there. But in what we call the Lord's Prayer, the model prayer, what did he pray? "Lord, forgive us our debts as we" what? "As we forgive our debtors," or trespasses, depending on your translation. But then as soon as he finishes that prayer, what does he say? Essentially, the amount of mercy you're going to receive is equivalent to the amount of mercy you're willing to give. It's the same thing James said. It's the same thing that Jesus is emphatically teaching Peter in this parable. And what happens when this servant doesn't take the mercy he received and reflect it to everyone else? Now the debt becomes due in full. And the same thing's true for us. We don't want to think about that, but the same thing's true for us. It's the same thing James said. We're going to be judged by the whole weight of the law. The debt's going to be due in full. And guess what? We can't pay it. We can't pay it. Now, I told you this was going to be a simple lesson. It's simple. It's super simple, but it's really, really hard to live out. Okay? Look at what Jesus says, verse 35. "So also, my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." Now, I'm going to end with this. You're going to go, "Hey, there's 20 minutes left." I know. But I'm going to end with this. Okay? Peter started with a question. And the question was trying to put a ceiling on how much mercy one should show towards someone else. But that's a legalistic way of thinking, right? How many times do I have to do something in order to get the checkbox, right? Jesus is using this story to teach Peter a fundamental truth about the kingdom, And what is that fundamental truth about the kingdom? It's based on mercy. What's the limit of the mercy that you should show to others? There is no limit. There is no limit. Why is there no limit? Because there was no limit in the mercy that we received. If there had been a limit, we would not be saved. There's no limit. A fundamental truth of the kingdom, of God's kingdom, is that it is built on the concept of mercy. Mercy that we as the subject in the kingdom have received, and mercy that we in turn are expected to reflect to those who are around us. Does that mean mercy toward people that we don't know that come into this building to be, to associate with us? Yes. Does that mean people we come in contact with at work? Yes. Does that mean our neighbors down the street? Yes. Everybody. As we said this morning, everybody is somebody that Christ died for. And if we lose sight of that, then we are giving up on the mercy that we have received, which should be a sobering thought. And that's the fundamental truth that Jesus was trying to help Peter understand, because Peter's mind was thinking of, I got to check this box. And Jesus is saying, no, this isn't about checking a box. This is about a way of life. And that's what the kingdom of heaven is all about. If we are subjects in God's kingdom, we are expected to be merciful people because we have been shown an infinite amount of mercy. And so that's the lesson. Not from me, from Jesus and from James, his brother, and from most of the writers of the New Testament who talk about this concept of mercy. Paul in Ephesians 2, that Sam reminded me of. It's about mercy. It's about mercy. So may we all take this as a challenge to go out into the world and look for opportunities to reflect the mercy that we have been shown, and to not make distinctions like we're tempted to make and like the world makes, but to treat everyone as someone that Christ died for. This wasn't a message about responding to the gospel, but obviously this idea of mercy is built on the truth of the gospel, that we have been shown mercy and that mercy is available to anyone who will respond. If you happen to be here tonight, we don't want an opportunity to go by without offering you that opportunity to respond to the mercy that God has made available to us. If you need to respond to that, we would love for you to be a part of our family here. If you're here tonight and you are struggling with anything that you need prayers for, you need encouragement with, anything we can do for you, as always, please come while we sing our invitation song.